Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new movies, including the much-anticipated Black Widow, Fear Street Part 2, 1978, Sun, Vicious Fun, and No Sudden Move. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Trying Season 2 on Apple TV+. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about is a sad piece of news, and that is Richard Donner has passed away this week at the age of 91. So definitely rest in peace. This man was a huge impact on my movie watching as a kid growing up. I mean, maybe not as much as Spielberg or Lucas, being those as defining the generation, but he's certainly up there well into the top five because he was the one who directed the original Superman, the movie. And he directed a good chunk of Superman too. And well, we all know what happened with that, but he also did movies like the Lethal Weapon films. He did the Goonies. He did Lady Hawk, a much forgotten film with Matthew Broderick and Rutger Hauer and Michelle Pfeiffer, but a really fantastic medieval fantasy adventure. And he also did The Omen, the original Omen, with Gregory Peck and Lee Remick. And that's a fantastic movie. And even if you just look at that list, I mean, this isn't even going deeper into his filmography that included other modern action films and westerns and old TV shows, including The Twilight Zone. That's a pretty diverse filmography. Everything from superheroes to horror films to medieval fantasies to cop movies. I mean, Richard Donner was a fantastic director, and obviously, you know, as he got older, he slowed down, but that run from the 70s through the 90s, he was fantastic. So it's sad to see him go. Rest in peace. The next piece of news I want to talk about is the San Diego Comic-Con is happening this year. I think it's happening this week, but like it was last year due to the coronavirus restrictions and the inability to have a fully functioning Comic-Con, even with certain restrictions lifted, they're going virtual this year. Now, there's going to be a in-person event, but that's going to be happening apparently over Thanksgiving weekend. So that's several months away. And they're going to be doing what they did last year and streaming a lot of their content and their panels. And if you're interested in that sort of thing, you've got it. You obviously just don't have the in-person experience or the trade show floor or anything like that. If you want to do the trade show, check it out in November. But the thing that's interesting about it is if you look at all the stuff that's lined up for it, there's very few movies having any sort of presence whatsoever in this, partly because you don't have the in-person event type stuff. You don't bring in the celebrities to one location when all you're going to be doing is streaming out a video of it. Anyways, you're not going to have Hall H just packed with people. So they're leaning more towards television projects. There's one film project, Snake Eyes, the G.I. Joe movie that's coming up in a couple weeks. That's getting a big push, but pretty much in terms of the big names of stuff, it's all TV stuff. And even a lot of the TV stuff, it's stuff that's currently airing. You know, like something like Central Park has a panel, and that's that animated series on Apple TV+. Well, it makes sense because they're in the middle of it. The other problem that they have with movie releases is they don't want to start pre-planning publicity for a movie that is supposed to come out in, like, say, in December, and it might still get moved. It have nothing to do with any sort of surges or coronavirus issues, but just the fact that there is this logjam of movies that are being released that are all going to just come tumbling out at the end of the year, and I think you're going to start seeing shifting dates just to kind of make room for them all. So it's sort of like a half Comic-Con this year, but that's I find that interesting that they're leaning more on the TV series because the TV series, you don't have to change the release dates because if you've got the series ready to go, you can start airing it whenever. The last piece of news is a little nudge into the box office. I'm taking a break a little bit from the box office in a big way because next week I'll be digesting and dissecting everything that happens with Black Widow this weekend, because I think this is going to be a turning point. And we have to wait not just to see how well Black Widow did in American theaters or domestic theaters. We have to see how well it did overseas. And we got to see how well those Disney Plus premium numbers are. But what's interesting is I saw a note that The Boss Baby from last weekend, the viewers on Peacock were about, you know, a little bit more than 750,000 viewers. Now, granted, they weren't paying the premium price that they do for something like Cruella's, but they more people watched this in its first weekend than Cruella, even though you had to pay $30 for Cruella. For Peacock, you could pay anywhere from $5 to $10 for the subscription service, and that gets you the whole package. So there's a huge price differential. But it shows that did sort of help boosting some viewership onto the Peacock service. Because remember that Trolls World Tour, it reportedly made like $100 million during the pandemic last summer while it was on streaming. And it was a premium VOD title, but it was a popular one, unlike something like, you know, the King of Staten Island, which has a much more limited audience. And that's why I'm saying keep your eye on Black Widow. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first show I want to talk about in the trailer park is Marvel's What If. They dropped a trailer this week, and it is coming on the Disney Plus service on August 11th.
Every universe is different. Each one unique.
Slow down a little bit. There's a few people in the room that don't understand. Not me, I get it.
I am the Watcher. I observe all that transpires here. Journey to face the unknown and ponder the question.
This is a little bit different than some of the stuff they've been doing on Disney Plus for the Marvel things, because this is going to be animated. It's not live action like WandaVision or Falcon and the Winter Soldier or Loki is now. But one of the things it is doing is it's playing around even more with the multiverse. Everything's opening up for multiverse stuff in Marvel, and it's going to open up a lot of things. And I can't wait, because I love the multiverse stuff, just the concept in general. So this Marvel What If looks like it's going to be a really solid series with some great speculative fiction going back to the roots of the comic books, but it is going to be animated. And so it's not going to draw the same appreciation that a live action series is, because the live action movies, WandaVision and especially Loki for sure, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, those, you had the movie stars in them doing cinematic level shows on TV. And that's what Disney is pushing. But this is going to lead into the whole new Marvel universe with the multiverse. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. The next one I want to hit is Hotel Transylvania, Transformania, in theaters on October 1st.
For centuries, no human has had the power to become a monster. Until now. Behold the transformation ray.
Awesome!
Dad?
You're human, Drac!
Oh no, I have a total dad bod!
There is a place deep in the Amazon. Only there can the transformations be reversed.
You know, I watch the Universal Monster movies every year. I watch at least a handful of them. And I have great love for sort of those monster mash movies where they get everybody together, you know, Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman. And this one looks cute. I always thought that they're cute movies. They're not fantastic. They're not my favorite, but they're enjoyable to watch, especially if you've got kids. What's interesting is my kids have grown up to the point that I think they're less interested in these movies. So Hotel Transylvania, Transformania, looks like it's going to be kind of fun. And I like seeing horror element films coming out in October. And that's a great way to kick off October, the fall movie season. Cool. I'm looking forward to hopefully getting a screening so I can see it in theaters. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Sun and Vicious Fun.
The Mash.
He did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the Mash.
Thank you.
Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with a couple horror films. As I know, I just said in the last segment that I love having horror movies coming out in October. But you know what? Horror movies in July are fine, too. I'm okay with that. In fact, there was this weird time, maybe about 10, 12 years ago, where they were dropping horror movies in the summer. They were dropping more horror movies in June and August than they were in October. That's because they're competing with Saw and then Paranormal Activity. You know, stuff like The Conjuring always came out in June. I think most of the Conjuring movies have not been around Halloween at all. But anyways, these two films I'm going to be talking about in this segment are on the Shudder TV service. Sun, which I'm going to talk about first, it debuted this week. I think it was Thursday is when it dropped on the service. A woman goes on the run with her son when she thinks she's being followed by a murderous cult that she escaped from years ago.
Good night.
I love you, Mom.
The doctors couldn't find anything physically wrong with your son.
Think you could have been dreaming?
Wake up, honey.
Why do you think these people were here? Who are they?
I was raised in a cult. Who was that?
They're coming for us. They awakened something in him.
There have been several cult movies, people escaping cult films. I mean, going back to Martha Marcia May Marlene, which was really the movie that put Elizabeth Olsen on the map long before she got the role in The Avengers. And I've seen several movies about people getting out of a cult or escaping a cult. I think the most recent Wrong Turn movie, that involved a cult-type situation. There have been other ones where, you know, the cult's coming after and sneaking into town. So it does kind of tread some familiar territory here. Now, this movie is a slow burn, almost to the point that it's almost a little bit too deliberate for my taste. I can appreciate a slow burn movie, but it really does take its time to do it. It's also very, very grim. And I'm okay with that for the right film, but sometimes it's so weighty to watch that it's at times tough to get through. What's interesting, you've got Emile Hirsch. He's probably the biggest name in this movie. And he plays a detective who's helping the woman who she's called the police because she thinks the cultists came into her home and were doing something to her son. I mean, he's so well known as a younger guy, and he's, of course, gotten older over the years. And he used to have some big movies. I mean, he was in, like, Speed Racer, the Wachowski movie from, like, 13 years ago. And he even did he's done some other horror movies. One of the best known horror movies he did was The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which he played a coroner or some, you know, assistant to a coroner or something, trying to figure out the cause of death of this mysterious Jane Doe corpse. So he's got his roots still kind of dip a little bit into horror movies, but he still looks young. I mean, he still has that baby face, and I think he's fine in the role. The movie is much more on the shoulders of Andy Matichek, who is the main actor. She's the mother of the kid, and she has these memories of being in the cult, and the whole question is whether or not these are real memories she has, or whether these are just her memories sort of being fabricated to, you know, kind of push trauma out of her mind. And you have to wonder who's part of the cult and who's not, because there's a possibility that, like, the doctors in the hospital are not giving their proper treatment because there may be members of the cult and she has to go on the run. And it has some very dark, grim, and at times quite violent moments to it. I'm not going to lie, but it still has a driving force. It does manage to, with the slow burn, to increase the tension steadily throughout, and it increases my interest in it. You know, like that first half of it, I'm just like, this doesn't look like there's a whole lot to it. But then they, you know, maybe there's something about her son that's different. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's pretty obvious when you watch the film, because it becomes a central part of it, and you're wondering what's actually happening and if things can be changed. So this is grim. It's heavy. There's not a shred of humor in it at all. But it's effectively done. It has some very good imagery. But like I said, it is a grim horror movie. It's not for the weak of heart or the weak of stomach. So I'm still going to say that Sun kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another film that is on Shudder. This actually came out last week. and that is Vicious Fun. In 1983, a horror journalist from Minnesota stumbles into a self-help group for serial killers and finds himself their new target.
This is what you said to me. A group of serial killers attending a 12-step meeting tried to kill me and my accomplice before disappearing, leaving us with three dead bodies?
No, two dead bodies.
Sorry to interrupt your meeting.
Thanks so much for coming out. How do you maintain your lifestyle and keep your urges under control?
Just be a mess.
Have you ever bitten into a kidney?
What, is this some kind of support group for serial killers?
Why are you here?
It's complicated.
This, like I said, has been out for about a week on Shudder, and I think you can get it if you got Shudder like through Prime Video or something like that. It's a comedy. It's 100% a partial horror comedy. So it starts off having some fun with the genre. It also kind of pokes fun at the genre and, you know, taking place in the 80s, but it does feel like an authentically 80s kind of movie, but it has these hyper real characters, not just the serial killers, but a lot of the other characters that show up. And it's basically about this nerd, this dork, who's got a good looking roommate, but he isn't able to have her find any interest in him in a romantic means. But he ends up following one of her dates, and it turns out this guy's a serial killer and he wants to save her. And then there's this other woman who is involved in the serial killers, but she seems to be going after the serial killers. This is extremely violent in a almost cartoony sort of way. Kind of like as I've talked about the Fear Street movies, where they're really leaning into the absurdity of the violence that you get in a film like this. With the exception of one character, who's sort of like the main bad guy played by Ari Melin, everyone is very, very funny in this movie. Ari Melin tends to chew the scenery a little bit too much, but it's got some familiar faces to it. You've got David Koechner in it. He's, of course, a famous comedian. You also have Julian Richings, who you wouldn't immediately recognize the name, but you'll recognize the face. He oftentimes plays weird or strange characters. I think in one movie, I can't remember what it was, but he like played one of the horsemen of the apocalypse. That's the kind of, he's very gaunt and creepy looking, and he's very funny. And it's a very effective film and extremely hilarious. It has a lot of jokes in there for horror fans, and it makes it perfect airing it on Shudder, because Shudder's, of course, a premium service for horror and thrillers alike. Now, if you're not into slasher movies, you're not into serial killer movies, or you have not seen very many of them from the 80s, a lot of the jokes are going to be lost on you, because it is absolutely kind of sending up that genre while being in that genre at the same time. That's my favorite kind of horror comedy, is when it can make fun of the genre but also still be a bona fide film within that genre. And I think that Vicious Fun succeeds in that. It's raucous, it's crazy, it's over the top, it's violent, but it's also very funny. And it has some great performances all the way up and down, and not just some of the big names and the stars, but people who have minor parts do a great job in it. So actually, if you're a fan of horror movies, check out Vicious Fun. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Black Widow and No Sudden Move. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump back into the movie reviews with the big one for the week, and that is Black Widow. Following the events of Captain America: Civil War, Natasha Romanoff finds herself joining forces with her estranged sister to stop an international terrorist from running a group of elite female assassins.
After all this time, what brings you home?
I'm on the run.
I was trying to do something good. Any more than just a trained killer.
You're fooling yourself. We are still both trained killers.
There's a new world of widows. New enemies. I'm done running from my past.
This was supposed to come out last May. It was supposed to kick things off. It was supposed to be a huge summer for movies. And then, of course, the coronavirus came in and changed all that. and they shelved this movie. What's interesting is I think Marvel planned to have this movie come out and then go into their TV series. But because of the restrictions and wanting to keep Black Widow with a theatrical run, they postponed it enough, and now they've had stuff like WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and now Loki rolling ahead before it. So I pair this much more with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because if you look at WandaVision and Loki, they kind of exist in the same realm where they're dealing with magic and some very cosmic elements to it, you know, multiverse ideas and concepts. Whereas Falcon and the Winter Soldier fits more into the Captain America framework of the movies, where it's political thrillers and international espionage and action, and that's absolutely what Black Widow is. Now, it's kind of an origin story, but not really. I mean, it gives her background. It gives a lot more in her background of who she is and where she came from and why she is the way she is. And it gives, of course, some background for her sisters, played by Florence Pugh, who's fantastic in the movie. And the two of them do well. In a way, I mean, as good as Scarlett Johansson is in the role of Black Widow, she's had, you know, what, a dozen or so movies to galvanize that character. Florence Pugh almost steals the show from Scarlett Johansson. She's fantastic. And if you don't know who she was in Little Women. She was in Midsommar. She was in Fighting With My Family. She's a fantastic actress. And they play off each other extremely well. And it really feels like it ties right into Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Not necessarily with a plot, but with some of the ideas and messaging that goes through, because the whole thing is they're going back to their past and their connection to Russia and, you know, tracking down their fake father and mother. What and fake father's played by David Harbour, who has a history as a Russian superhero. And it opens up a lot of doors to other potential projects that you can have some fun with, especially if they start diving into the Disney Plus stuff. It's an epic movie. It's large screen. It's big. It has that same push of scope that I would say Captain America Civil War has. Whereas like Captain America, the First Avenger was a period piece. Captain Avenger, the Winter Soldier was more of a, you know, was more of a run and gun based on the concept of something like 3 Days of the Condor, which is, they did that deliberately. Whereas Captain America Civil War is much bigger and explosive. And this one's very similar to that, only which is a much smaller cast, but it really gives you some backstory and it really fleshes out the character of Black Widow, who's really not had much chance to be fleshed out. I mean, the best you got really was in the Winter Soldier when she was on the run with Steve Rogers. But this has everything you want from a Marvel movie. It's got the action, it's got the scope, it's got the humor, it's got the irreverence, it's got a good villain, and you also have, you know, the complex storyline where not everybody is 100% good or 100% bad, and people have different loyalties, and it's not just a black or white world that anybody lives in. You know, or a red, white, and blue, or a red and yellow world that everybody lives in, whatever you want to talk about, what colors of what flag you're dealing with. It's a Marvel movie, and it's great to see the return of Marvel movies, and it's great to see the return of the big picture. And look, go see it in the theater. I support that. You know, if you want to stay at home and watch it on Disney Plus, $30, honestly, if you got a family of five, $30 is a steal for all five of you to watch the movie. If you're a single person living at home, yeah, you can go to a matinee and go see it for a lot less. Do what you're most comfortable with, because this is going to be one of the big summer movies to beat. Black Widow totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about No Sudden Move. This movie came out last week on HBO Max. It came out rather quietly. I was surprised. They didn't do a whole lot of publicity for it. They really publicized the trailer, and then they kind of backed off on it. And I was a little unsure why, because they didn't have any, they didn't do regional screenings. They did a couple like in New York and LA, but that's about it. They really didn't cover the movie. And usually that means they don't have any confidence in it, which is odd because it was dropping on HBO Max on a Thursday. And I'm like, well, people are going to watch it or not. But I realized after watching the movie, there's a reason for it. I'll talk about it in a second. But in this film, Steven Soderbergh directs this crime drama in which a group of random thugs are dragged into a mess of corporate espionage in 1950s Detroit.
So what's the score?
We're sending a man that works in an office to pick something up. You are part of a babysitting team watching his family while he does it.
What is going on?
What's going on, big guy?
Yeah, what are we doing?
We're following instructions. Are you helping me or are you not helping me?
No.
Set up, man.
God called me, offering me $10,000 to turn you in.
Think you're the only one that can make a move? I can make a move, too.
I think one of the big reasons that Warner Brothers got a little skittish with this movie and didn't provide widespread screeners, which is why I didn't talk about it last week, is because it's a very slow burn to the point that it's a niche movie. And it's not a slow burn like I talked about Sun being a slow burn. When they released the trailer, the narrative I started to see was, ooh, a Steven Soderbergh heist movie. You think Steven Soderbergh heist movie, immediately you think of Ocean's 11, 12, 13, 18, 46, you know. It's not that. It is not that punchy, fun, let's all get the gang together and go knock over a casino type feel to it. It is a much more slow burn. It's not as much really a gangster movie because the gangsters are sort of peripheral to it. If there's something somebody's trying to get in this office in one of the major car companies in downtown Detroit. It's, of course, back in the 1950s where that was the hub of the American auto industry. It's got a fantastic cast. I mean, you've got Don Cheadle in it. You've got Benicio del Toro playing two of the thugs. You've got Matt Damon showing up at one point. You've got David Harbour, again, who is also in Black Widow. Ray Liotta plays a gangster in this movie. Big surprise. But it's very intricate, and it does have that storyline and the twists and the turns and the layers and this person touching this person and helping this person and a hand-over-hand-over-hand complexity to it. And that's what I found so fascinating. It's a movie you actually have to sit and watch. You have to sit and watch to follow. It's not something you can casually watch out of the corner of your eye. You know, it's not like Fast and Furious. You really don't need to know what the plot is. You just like, oh, look, cool cars and big explosions. This one, if you zone out for 5 minutes, you're going to miss stuff. And it's just expertly done, very well paced by Steven Soderbergh, beautifully shot with some amazing, not just camera angles, but camera lens choices. It has these very wide lenses that pick up everything. You know, it's slow paced, but it has these exciting moments. It has these depth of these characters that all of them are great characters, but everybody has different loyalties here and there, and they can team up and help each other, but they're always looking behind their back at the same time. It's very intricately put together. It gives great backstories. It offers a lot of exposition in creative ways that don't make it sound like a cliche. I was very pleased with that. This was a fantastic movie. I enjoyed the heck out of it. It's a shame it didn't get more play. That's why I wanted to, you know, give a little bit of a spotlight on it now, because No Sudden Move rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Fear Street Part 2, 1978, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Trying Season 2. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment, and we're going to be talking about yet another horror movie. I know, I am a horror movie buff, but no, this one's relevant, and let's talk about Fear Street Part 2, 1978. The survivors from the 1994 massacre in Shadyside dig into past events, namely an attack on the town's camp in 1978, where a witch possessed a teenager to be a serial killer.
You are our last chance. How do we end this?
You have to go back.
1978. The first day of camp.
Run!
One way or another, you're gonna die tonight.
There it is. It's not just a diary, it's a map.
I'm not letting you die.
My sister's still out there!
We can end this.
Like I said last week when Fear Street Part 1 came out, I love this concept of doing three movies as a planned trilogy. I'm not, you know, like, yeah, sure, Lord of the Rings did that too. But that was a book that was, you know, 60 years old at the time they were making it. Instead of just making one movie, they said, let's make all three, and we're going to tie them together, and we're going to tie it to basically different subgenres of the horror realm. The first movie that came out last week is based on those 90s slasher movies, which existed with slasher movies in their past. Movies like Scream, and I Know What You Did Last Summer, and that sort of ilk. This one goes back to 1978, which is the year Halloween came out, and I think there's a reason they chose that date. Now, it takes place at a summer camp, and of course, most people recognize horror movie summer camp as being a Friday the 13th thing. Yeah, Friday the 13th came out in 1980, but you're in that time frame. And then, of course, the 80s was just filled with slasher movies everywhere from sorority houses to campgrounds to old castles to average everyday neighborhoods. You've got one of the characters from these events telling the story of what happened. And you're, of course, seeing people who are, what, 16 years younger in this one because we flash back to them at camp. And they are, you know, you're seeing younger versions of some of them. And you're seeing images that you saw in the last episode. Now, I will say this, for the authenticity of it, it feels like a camp movie from the 70s or 80s, but it also feels like a camp. I went to camp in the 70s and 80s. This is exactly what it felt like. It has that look and that feel and the clothes and the bug spray and the hairstyles and just the heat from the summer camp. It feels like an authentic camp slasher movie, although there's more to it. Of course, it's dealing with the Witch of Shadyside, and they've got connections there, so it's more than just a psycho in a hockey mask. It stars Sadie Sink, who's best known for being Max in the Stranger Things series, and she's good. I mean, she does a good job kind of holding it together as that, you know, sort of headstrong, you know, doesn't take crap from anybody teenager who always has a chip on her shoulder, but it still seems to be a nice person. The thing that's interesting about it is it has the violence of a slasher movie. But unlike movies like Friday the 13th, which first of all was, if you recall, the Friday the 13th movies were all about the counselors getting killed. And then they were played by not always age-appropriate people. I mean, you didn't just get a whole bunch of 18 and 19-year-olds. You got people in their 20s to play counselors at 18 or 19 or kids. You get people who are like 22 playing teenagers. Well, this one, they use age-appropriate people, and so there's some kind of harrowing murder scenes in here. So it is a little, I mean, it doesn't change the characters of what a slasher movie was from back then, but it is a little bit disturbing to watch with it being a little bit more age-appropriate casting. But overall, it's an effectively done scary slasher movie that has the elements you expect. They're a little bit on the nose at times, and it's not as well constructed of a emulation of the 90s version, but it's still pretty doggone good. And being somebody who grew up with horror movies and slasher movies of the 80s and seeing them all, even the stuff that I watched on VHS later on that was from the late 70s, you know, it really hits that mark. So I got to say, Fear Street Part 2, 1978, rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's a show that's on Apple TV Plus that I literally been meaning to cover for over a year, and that is called Trying. It's made with the BBC cooperation, and it takes place in London, which is different than some of the stuff you'll see on Netflix in particular, which is like stuff from Channel 4 or the BBC that they've just purchased the rights to and they air it in the States. This one was created for Apple TV Plus, and it's called Trying. Now, the story is about this young couple played by Rafe Spall and Esther Smith, and they are wanting to have kids. And so at first they want to try to make their own the natural way. And they're running into issues with that. And then they decide to go the adoption route. The first season is them kind of coming to that decision and jumping through the hoops you have to get on the adoption rolls for the UK. Now, what's interesting about it is Well, I've not had to adopt a kid, so I don't know anything about the process. But that's the American system, you know, and while they're all kind of the same, the English system is different. And it's kind of interesting watching this scene, what they look for and what they don't, and the same struggles that a young couple would have who is not making tons of money, who still want to have a kid, but then they're up against the perfect potential parents. And that's where this second season kicks off. So in season two, after deciding to try to adopt a kid, Jason and Nikki struggle with a competitive market, budgetary shortfalls, and family strife.
What? We're never going to find a kid.
They go so quickly. This is you.
What?
You took too long again.
Yeah, but it's difficult choosing a child from a photograph, isn't it? You want to get in there, kick the tires a little bit.
Jeff, what is the one thing that we need to be able to take these kids?
Money, experience, preparation.
I know it's hard, it's a mammoth undertaking, and I should know I have brought up two happy, friendly, well-adjusted children out of four.
Please, I'm having enough trouble getting my own family without keeping your one functioning too.
It's not just about this singular focus on getting a kid. That is certainly the background focus and takes attention off of everything else. It's really about this couple and them getting to know each other more. And they've got friends who are a couple, who've got a couple kids, who aren't really enjoying parenthood as much. So you got that juxtaposition of the couple that really wants kids and then the couple that has kids who doesn't really want them. And it's also about them dealing with their families and, you know, how their parents are and sort of like just that inner connectivity, you know, so sort of like in the series Fleabag, where it's about being her own train wreck of a life, but it's also her dealing with her sister. And in this one, you got Esther Smith as Nikki dealing with her own sister, who's got her own problems. And like I said, you've got Jason, played by Rafe Spall, who's got his own friends and they've got their own problems. And that it's sort of like a relationship comedy from the UK. And it's, I think it's 6 or 8 episodes. It debuted last year during the pandemic. And I watched a chunk of it. I just never got a chance to talk about it. And then they debuted season two in May. And it's finally, all the episodes are now on Apple TV Plus. So if you're a binge watcher, you can watch all 8 episodes of season two. They are now available on Apple TV Plus. It's a charming little show, and a lot of that is due to the stars. Not just the writing, but the stars. Rafe Spall, who, he's not a big name in the States, but he's well-known in the UK, and he's been in other movies, but he's not really made a splash for mainstream Americans. But he plays a very relatable guy, and Esther Smith, who plays Nikki, she's just adorable. She was in the TV series Cuckoo with Greg Davies. It's on Netflix. And she was also in the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child in the West End, I think. But she is just simply adorable. She is just a cute but real, and she's not a manic pixie dream girl. She has those sort of freak out moments, but so does everybody, and it's very relatable, but she's not caustic about it. The two of them are very sweet together, and it's their chemistry that really makes the show work. So I think this is sweet and adorable, and it's fun to watch. And I think it hits an American sensibility as much as it hits an English sensibility. So it seems to work in both realms. So yeah, if you've not seen this, it's worth checking out. It's a sweet little show. Trying season two totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available this week is the new film Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, which is a documentary about the development of the TV series Sesame Street. Vintage releases this week include Space Jam in 4K, Howard the Duck in 4K, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World in 4K, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the Bomb, The House on Sorority Row Special Edition, and a double 1-2 punch of 48 hours and another 48 hours. And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Space Jam, A New Legacy, Schmigadoon, and Fear Street 1666. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.